Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 202, being recorded on the 1st of November, 2017, with special guest Justin Luck. I'm Sujit. To describe with me, I have Evan and our special guest Justin. Kale and Russell have not joined us yet. They might jump in on the call in a little bit, but we thought we'd get started and record this so that we don't keep our guest waiting too long. We're really happy to have Justin on for a very important topic, very exciting topic to talk about. We'll get to that in a minute, but let's just do a quick roundup on the Azure space. And Evan, as usual, thanks for putting some of those links in the show notes. I see the SQL, obligatory SQL updates over there.
We've got all three of my hot buttons today. we'll talk about the SQL one first. You've got the ability, right, to do SQL Data Warehouse and then, Azure SQL DB. And those are two different products kind of targeted at different data sets, right? Data Warehouse is, massive, relatively cold data. And then SQL Database, a lot of times you'll see people combine that with kind of their hot data, right? So their current stuff. Now we have the ability to do Elastic Query where you can span those. So you can basically kind of think about it like a pass-through query through SQL Database back to through SQL Data Warehouse. So the end result is, from the developer, from the end user perspective, they don't really need to know or care where that data is sitting. They put it where it makes best sense, but then they can use run their queries and access the data without really having to care as much about where that lives.
Yeah, that's a pretty neat thing. And I think the SQL, I like the fact that the SQL Server in the cloud is becoming more and more useful, right? Because on premises, this might have been difficult to do, right? You're doing an Elastic Query and doing all this configuration, and this just works in the cloud, which is one of the advantages.
Yeah, I mean, on-prem, you used to be able to do partition queries, but man, they were always ugly, right, to kind of manage them and set them up, and you had to be very cognizant of what was going where and how you were breaking things out. Here it's a lot more transparent, which is the goal.
Cool. Well, I'll talk about the virtual network service endpoints, which is one of my favorite upcoming features in Azure. As you know, we've always had this problem with some of our services that they're all exposed to the public internet, and obviously our enterprise customers don't always like that. They want to keep them internal. They want to lock them down so that they're only accessible from inside of their cloud service environments or their virtual networks, and we didn't always allow that. We had ways to specify IP filters or IP whitelists, so to speak, but that again has its own problem because you've got to keep it up to date. So right now we have this feature called the Virtual Network Service Endpoints, where you can tell the and they've opened this preview to SQL Server and to storage, so you could tell these services to only be accessible from a particular VNet, for example, which would be the customer's VNet. And now you don't have to worry about anybody else accessing them because they're only available from inside of that VNet. And so that's what service endpoints means, and they're expanding that to a lot more regions now, this feature, and they've also added SQL Server to the mix in terms of services that will support this feature.
Yeah, people have been asking for this for a long, long, long time.
Yep, absolutely.
So the last thing to talk about, and this one's actually the reverse, right? We do this once in a while where we're actually talking about something and leaving. And I've kind of joked about it before, there's always another portal, but we are getting ready to hit a pretty good inflection point with our portal, where the classic Azure portal, the manage.windowsazure.com one, which you can tell it's aged just by the name, right? We haven't called it Windows Azure in a long time. Azure AD is going to be disabled in that portal starting November 30th on. At that point, you'll only be able to use the new portal, right? So the ARM portal. And I think I was kind of clicking through the portal. I couldn't find anything else that was in there and that was still enabled. There may be some extra services that I just don't have access to with the subscription I was using, but we've got to be getting pretty close to the point where there's nothing else left in there. So I think the time for the classic portal is getting short at this point.
No, it's about time. I agree.
Yeah.
It's nice to have just one, and there's not, you know, the new portal is just fabulous, right? I mean, we talked about last week about some of the features with the searching and everything. It's there's nothing not to like about the new portal.
Yep.
Well, thanks for putting all those links again, Evan. I think that kind of rounds up our update. So let's move on to our special guest, Justin. Justin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you do at Microsoft and your passion in Azure.
Yeah, of course. So thanks for having me on. My name is Justin Luck. I am currently a PM within Azure Compute. So I work mostly on Linux and open source type work. So a couple of the things that our team does are things like Cloud Shell or the Serial Console, which is about to enter preview that was talked about at Ignite. We work on things like Instance Metadata Service as well, and as well as some partner work with people like HashiCorp or GitHub Enterprise and things like that.
We've actually had HashiCorp, a couple of them, on our show before talking about some of their products.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's almost, I don't want to say that the portal's going to become a first-class citizen because, you know, it's certainly not quite the same as, you know, using some of the native tools and getting the logs off the machines. But you're able to do a lot of really valuable work in the portal these days, especially, you know, as you add in the Cloud Shells and that kind of stuff. Is that kind of, where do you see some of this going?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the portal ends up being a really important utility for a lot of our users, especially for scenarios that are targeted like troubleshooting. For Serial Console especially, this is an important scenario that our Linux users have been asking for quite a long time. And so it's exciting that we can finally get it up and running and get it out there relatively soon. But I think it's really more of a statement on the need for Azure to have this modern management story. And so that really means accessibility and reliability. And so basically, wherever you have a browser, you should be able to complete these key tasks that anyone should be able to do.
So it sounds like that's kind of the core fundamental you're going to, is you're not restricted to sitting in front of your laptop or anything to manage these tools.
Yeah.
You're not restricted to having a whole bunch of things installed. It's, I can get to a browser, I have an internet connection, I can do my kind of key administrative tasks that I have to. I may not be able to do everything, but it's the key, you know, the important ones I need to be able to do, or I need to be able to do them from anywhere, where it's about enabling those.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that promise of the cloud that you don't need a special machine and that you can just kind of burst in and out and go use things as you need. Bringing that value prop to any kind of management scenario that might be mission critical is what we're going after.
So yeah, this you know, I wonder if we're diving on the Cloud Shell part of it, because that's been one of the most interesting recent add-ons to the portal. Can you give us some history as to how that came about, this whole thing with the Cloud Shell? Like, how did the idea come about to do something like that?
Yeah. So I think a lot of the impetus came around, you know, a couple of years ago, we had lots of feedback that Azure just had a really rough command line experience. Some of the tooling wasn't as mature as we wanted it to be. We went through a couple of iterations, like the CLI, XPLAT CLI that was written in Node, and then we had some resourcing to rewrite it basically in a new version that was written in Python. And so when the CLI 2.0 was getting ready to GA and release, some of the end user experiences started to pop up that we knew we needed to resolve. So some of this was a constant need to update. So, you know, the breakneck speed that we release some of these services at creates this overhead on users and needing to update and maintain a lot of these dependencies that these client tools resolve on. And so if we can instead take that overhead away and make it accessible from any website or any browser, then that was a value prop that we saw as something quite useful. And so that came into conjunction with some of the container work that we were doing. And so containers ended up being a very good format for us to give a clean slate environment that we could then manage for the user and give to them on demand.
Yeah, I mean, I up until, I guess I'm still in port. I'm just in a slightly different role now. But, you know, when I was in direct customer support for our broad customer base, I many, many times used the Cloud Shell, both the Linux variant and the Windows variant, to actually walk customers through things or to, you know, test things without having to set up my environment. I mean, I was helping somebody troubleshoot a certificate validation issue, and we, you know, jumped into the Cloud Shell and, you know, pulled up the Linux version, dropped, you know, started running the OpenSSL commands, and it was great because I didn't have to go track down, okay, what's the right build of OpenSSL, you know, get it installed on my machine. Oh, darn it, I forgot a dependency, right? It was great to be able to jump out and do that on the fly. And you know, with the Linux version, I'm sorry, with the Linux version, I mean, that thing's up and running in minutes, right? Very, very fast to be up and going.
Yeah, absolutely. The startup time is something that we're absolutely focused on. So right now we see times roughly between 15 to 35 seconds. And so a lot of the optimizations that we're doing under the hood are always trying to get that lower and making sure that any type of variance is always tightly held at least under 20 to 25 seconds. So we're getting closer. On the Windows side, you know, some of the underlying technologies like Windows containers are a little early on in their days, so they take a little bit longer, but that's something that our users can expect to improve vastly. And
you did catch, you just said that 20 seconds was slow for you guys, and that's not what you're shooting for, right? It's still incredibly fast, right? I mean, it takes me that long to go find my laptop, put in my, you know, two-factor auth and remote into the machine I have. So, like, you know, 15 to 25 seconds is fantastic.
Yeah, we want to knock that out of the park so that, you know, all of these things are easy to come and go as you need.
So give us a feel, Justin, for, you know, whatever you feel comfortable discussing here, is what kind of happens when you click on that button, you know, which has a little shell icon on it?
Yeah. Whenever you come into the portal and you click that button, you're basically coming in from an already authenticated state. So what then happens is you send a request that comes over to ARM that gives you a container that's already stood up on a machine. So the container itself is created on demand, but the machine that's hosting it is already waiting for you. And so once this gets brought up, we take a file share that is mapped to you, the user, so that you can bring any files or settings, persist state that you might need. And then once this gets mounted, you end up establishing a WebSocket to talk over to this container. And so once you have established that, you work through the portal or docs or wherever, whatever client you're using, to then send commands into this bash process that's running in that container.
You said docs. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So if you go into certain documentation on docs.microsoft.com, especially CLI 2.0 documentation, there are small green buttons that say try it on certain CLI commands to be run. And so what this will do is when you click it, it will pull up an iframe that's actually embedded within the document itself so that you can execute commands and walk through these documentation lessons step by step. So it's a little bit more integrated in your learning scenario.
Oh, that's nice.
So I had missed that. I had not seen that on sites now. Is the intent that we're going to roll this out to, you know, some of the PowerShell scenarios as well, kind of down the road? Because that is, you know, super handy to not kind of have to keep both of these. Hey, I got my screen over here. Here's my documentation in here. I'm going to go log into the portal to the Cloud Shell. And, like, that interior experience is great. I assume this is going to expand.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're currently still trying to figure out, you know, what's the best way for us to slip this into some of the PowerShell content. Mm-hmm. So that is currently being worked on. I think there are a few documents live right now that use it. But the best part about this is that it's super simple if you want to contribute or write documentation. So whenever you have your markdown file, you can do 3 tildes and say, you know, AZ CLI Interactive or AZ PowerShell Interactive. And then that's all it requires. And then once the markdown gets rendered, Whenever a user comes in to read it, they can click that button, and then any type of authentication or getting set up in your environment is going to be taken care of for the user. So it's a really great way to bootstrap some really in-depth learning lessons.
So you know what you've done? You've just enabled me to go gorilla on all of the content that the people that I work with.
Yeah,
I'll just be, you know, if I have to go make a, you know, I make a lot of, you know, content changes where, hey, this script is missing something or there's a typo, that kind of stuff, I'll just start sliding in the you know, Cloud Shell in it as I'm going, or just, hey, wow, what, look at all these pages of Cloud Shell. Clearly haven't been here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, have at it. Yeah, what we'd love to do is just have, you know, any type of user, whether, you know, they're internal or external, to say, hey, this is a way that I can make this content better, and then you can very quickly and easily do it. And so, yeah, that's awesome. Have at it.
Now, I've been using the Windows PowerShell command quite a bit, the Cloud Shell version. And as you said, it does take longer. I want to say about a minute. Can you give us some background as to what the additional delay is there? You know, you said something about the Windows containers and things like that.
Yeah. A big portion of this is strictly due to the size of the Windows container images. So Windows is just super heavy compared to Linux. And so whenever we have to go then pull down this image, stand up the container across all of these regions on demand, it ends up taking a little bit longer. But very, very shortly, we'll see these times come down. So we're excited to get that improved ASAP.
Okay.
You know, Sajid, but I just had this vision. You know, we had Bob Ward on a couple weeks ago talking about SQL Server and containers. I just had this vision of, like, you know, we're going to get down the road and I'm going to be able to launch in a Cloud Shell. I'm going to have a, you know, my CLI or my Azure PowerShell. I'm going to have SQL there. I'm going to have all these other things. I think it's probably not going to get there, but I just had this flash in my head of this kind of scenario.
Yeah.
That's really what, you know, these containers and these capabilities are enabling, that kind of really complicated scenario. So I don't think we're going to go there.
I think you're giving Justin nightmares over here.
this wide variety of scenarios is something that we definitely are cognizant of. So we're always maintaining this environment for users. So we end up expanding tooling over time. As an example, in the Bash environment since release in May, I think we've added over 12 new tools. So there's certainly a overhead that this imparts on our team, so we need to be smart about what we add in, but we are always listening to our users around, hey, are you missing this tool that you totally need? And I think there's actually a couple of requests right now over on User Voice, but that's something that we take into account. And so we definitely want to make sure that some of these, what might seem complex scenarios, we'd love to see how we can make them less complex by integrating them into Cloud Shell.
So that raises two interesting questions. I think you kind of answered one of them. But so if somebody does have a, you know, a tool that they think is a good candidate for being there by default, it sounds like going to User Voice is the right place to go to make that request. So they just look for Cloud Shell and then put in the request for that tool. Is that the right mechanism?
Yeah. So they can head over to aka.ms/cloudshell/feedback. And that'll take them to our User Voice. And yeah, you're more than welcome to come and make a tool request. What will generally happen is, unless it gets very, very heavy support, we'll just kind of follow up and say, hey, what exactly are you trying to do? Who else really has this need? And we'll kind of evaluate it on an ad hoc basis. But yeah, that's generally the process right now.
Okay, cool. No, that's good, because so that people have things to suggest. But and so the other thing is, and I did this, so I assume it's safe, but, you know, I'm going to ask just to be sure, but you know, I was supporting Azure Active Directory for a while, and our commandlets were not in the initial release of PowerShell, though I think they're coming, from what I had heard. But we just did a, you know, get Azure, well, I can't even remember the namespace for them, but we just basically, installed the PowerShell commandlets on the fly. I assume that environment, it's totally reasonable to install those extra tools we need kind of for one-off scenarios. I mean, is the intent to support that, or do I just kind of find a wrinkle that we really don't want people to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually use Azure Files, that's kind of this backup persistent store for exactly use cases like this. But there's some differences between the Linux and Windows versions. So the Linux version, you know, it's been out for a little bit longer. So you can store files or settings or anything that you'd like inside of the cloud drive directory, which is the mount point for your file share.
Right.
And then in Linux, we also persist your home directory using an image that's placed in your file share as well. And so you can actually do installs into home in Linux, and it will be persisted.
I caveat. Didn't realize that. I was just installing something for a one-off. I didn't even realize it was going to be persistent.
Yeah, so there's the caveat there for Linux is that you don't have sudo permissions. So if you do an install that requires that, it won't work, but otherwise it will. So on Windows, they have this cloud drive concept. So anything you install inside of that cloud drive directory will be persisted. And so that's why commandlets like that you install, they actually get routed into the cloud drive directory. But the home directory in Windows is not persisted as of now. So they're still in preview. They're still figuring out what the best way to offer file persistence is.
Right. But it sounds like that kind of mentality is kind of where you're going. So that if I have some set of tools that are just kind of unique to my situation, so they're not common enough for, you know, default inclusion, your intent is not to block those, right? You're still working on enabling all the different scenarios, but that's totally within the standard use case that you're thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. In our perspective here is that it's your machine, it's your environment, it's your settings. So as you grow in your needs for Azure, so are your tooling needs. And so whatever we can ensure that you can install on your own is definitely the flexibility that we want to provide.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think I encountered just this very thing. As I mentioned earlier, I've been using the PowerShell version of the Cloud Shell quite a bit of late. And we do a lot of work with cloud services. And actually, by default, the traditional Azure modules for cloud services are not installed on the default container that comes up. And so I had to do the install module command. It sucked in all of the Azure modules. And then thereafter, every time I went in there, it was still there. That was perfect. The other thing that I noticed, Justin, is that each time I went to the to the Cloud Shell, it seemed to bounce around on regions. Like sometimes I got US West and sometimes I got US East. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Yeah. So on your very first launch, what happens is you get routed by Traffic Manager to the region that we support that's closest to you. And so then you have to mount a file share that is within the same region. And so that's how that's determined. Right now, we do have some investigation to see if we can't let people pick their region that they would like, and then mount a file share from any other region. So we've got some investigation to do around what the latency and performance is for some of that, and to see if that's a good idea to enable or not. But yeah, Traffic Manager is what's dictating what region you are provided. But after the first setup, you are basically set to that region unless you unmount your file share and relaunch.
That's great. And you know what was nice is I'm using an Azure account with my customer, and the customer only gives us read access into the portal. But I was still able to spin up the Cloud Shell. I just needed to point to an existing storage account that already was provisioned, and Cloud Shell just worked. You know, I was able to do all the commands. So it really works for those scenarios where you have a restricted portal access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good call out. The advanced options whenever you onboard storage is a great workaround for that if you need to use an existing resource.
Yep. Thanks for putting that in there. Awesome. This is really good. So are there any things that we can look forward to in terms of Cloud Shell? I know you mentioned some of them already, but anything else that you feel comfortable sharing with our listeners?
We've got a couple of really cool things in flight. I'll just say that they take in a lot of the feedback that we get through user voice. So once again, if anyone out there has feedback, that's a great place to come and give it to us. So we've got some exciting stuff lined up this year. So I'll go ahead and let those announcements speak for themselves.
And again, for the audience, that was aka.ms/cloudshell/feedback, right?
Yes. Thank you, Evan.
Awesome. Okay, great. Well, Evan, anything else for Justin before we let him go?
No, I'm actually thrilled that we ran across you, Justin. This was, for a while, has been one of my favorite features to kind of mention to customers and to other support engineers as like,
yeah, that's
hey,
awesome.
There is value. You know, this will make your life easier. Go do it, because we've all fought, you know, PowerShell or CLI version installs, and the last thing you want to do when you're trying to solve problem X is go fight with install issues. So yeah, no, I think it's a great feature. Love to see more stuff coming down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, looking forward to getting some more good stuff into everyone's hands.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Evan. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.